Welcome, everybody. This is Circus Maximus. I'm your host, Nick Spiro. And today is November 3rd, 2017. Tonight, I have a guest. His name is Joseph Davis. Joseph, welcome to our program tonight.
Sorry, man.
We're on camera. This is a live stream going on YouTube today. This is our second one. Last week I had Lark in Texas, and I believe that Joseph had an opportunity to listen to that broadcast as well.
Yeah, it was a good show. Excellent. I really liked it.
So I came across Joseph's work, and I basically came across an article that covers a lot of the same material that Brendan and O'Connell and I discuss. And before we get into your article, Joseph, let's discuss what's going on with some of the people that we either know. I know both Jonathan Anzaziah and Brendan O'Connell, and both of them are going through some rough times right now with the so-called legal system and hate speech type of laws that take place in the crown countries like Australia, the UK, and Canada. So what's going on with some of our heroes in this so-called truth movement, Joseph?
Well, you know, you can tell me more about Jonathan. Not as familiar, although I've heard about him. I've heard you and Brendan talk about him. But, you know, Brendan O'Connell, you know, I came across him when he did an interview with Ryan Dawson, where the introduction came, and I know that, you know, what happened afterwards, but whatever, you know. But going back to Brendan, you know, I was a little turned off when that happened because I was following Ryan, but then I kept listening to Brendan, kept listening to him, and then he kind of brought me back, and I was like, wow, like, there's a lot of substance to what he's talking about. It makes sense. He had gone to Iran, talked about what he experienced, really laying it out there. Nothing to lose. Genuine. I think that that's critical when you're kind of looking for sources for information. And, you know, Brendan obviously is a genuine guy, or from what I can tell, and, you know, trying to fight the good fight. And, he, you know, you tell me, though, you know more about this than I do about him going to New Zealand, but he was in Malaysia, and I think he wanted to go ahead and just get it over with, because what it wasn't he wanted, or he had a warrant out in Australia,
Very light on charge, yeah, and he was going through the scrutiny. Basically, you're not allowed to use the internet ever, and you're going to violate this or that if you do this. A lot of these terms that he was subjugated to, and he just was like, man, I'm really getting fucking frustrated and tired of this. I just want to just leave this and be in activism without having to worry about not being able to use the internet. These type of countries have a lot of restrictions nowadays, the Judaization, the Israelification that's happening with a lot of the European countries has caused even a friend, somebody that I worked with in the past interviewed Paul Hickman, former host on Renegade Broadcasting. I actually recruited Paul to be a host on Renegade Broadcasting a few years back, and unfortunately, he took his life because he was an activist. He was in the UK and Britain, and he was basically going with the propaganda of putting flyers up, and he ended up getting a charge for his hate speech based on the flyers that he was posting, to where Paul was restricted from working in his medical field that he has been involved with for several years. So he was trying to lay low, and eventually the sadness and loneliness crept up on him. And unfortunately that happens, to where people don't know where to go and who to talk to, and they shut down, they isolate themselves. And that's the worst case scenario for the most part. And you've got someone like Brendan who didn't want to, he talked quite a bit about taking his own life and going through that loneliness and isolation. I mean, even his website, Isolation.
Yeah, absolutely. That's key. Like, that's what I kept thinking about him when I would see some of his videos, really at the lower points too, because he wasn't afraid to just lay it out. And, you know, it was concerning. And then you realize, man, he is isolated but preserved. And I forgot where he said he got that from, but interesting. And it was very true to his situation. So I know that, like from there, he, you know, what was it, like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, he went to New Zealand and then was immediately detained.
Correct. For character flaws that were not suitable for their society.
People should read those articles that they talked. There was two that were almost identical. We were kind of pointing, Nick and I are in a Facebook or no Twitter kind of, think tank.
We call it a think tank. It's a group chat, basically.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, somebody pointed out that the two articles that came out of the mainstream, you know, said he was a racist for basically pointing out people
Jewish supremacy.
Yeah, Jewish supremacy, complete racism. And I like how
holy books.
Let's keep the narrative simple, right?
Exactly. Like two pillars that Brennan and I want to permeate throughout the world is the Jewish supremacy in all of their holy books, as far as dominating over non-Jews from Jerusalem. Basically, in a nutshell, we are their servants in their holy books, and that to them is racist to call that out. But isn't it inverted, where wouldn't that be considered racist if they want to dominate over non-Jews and have us being their servants?
Yeah, Kabbalistic inversion. And you know, let's be clear here, we're talking about modern Judaism, not the Old Testament. I mean, even though that's part of it, but I mean, if you listen to E. Michael Jones, like, and I've been listening to a lot of him lately, and I'm currently reading his book, The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit and Its Impact on World History, you know, you have to understand, because I want to make it clear, because this is a very controversial subject matter. Obviously, it, you know, can ruin people. But when you, I think, like, when you point to people like Michael Hoffman or E. Michael Jones that kind of approach these things from a scholarly perspective, and for both of them, a Christian perspective, well, okay, what do we mean by modern Judaism and Jewish power, and what is it today? Because it is different from the Old Testament. You know, there was a schism that happened, you know, from Christ, and when Christ was executed, you know, the Jews that didn't convert to Christianity and following Christ basically chose Barabbas, a revolutionary, over Jesus. And that's, you know, the beginnings of what is modern Judaism. Mm-hmm. A big part of that too is the fall of the temple, the Jews versus the Romans, and was it 70 AD? There was no more sacrifice, priesthood, you know, that destroyed the last part of what was Judaism back then. And then what we have is this revolutionary spirit and this rejection of Logos or Christ, or you could say natural law, as, you know, Clint Richardson and Jan Irvin have had some really good discussions about, that are very interesting, in-depth discussions. And, you know, it's more of the interpretation of the New Testament as natural law and God is nature, that sort of thing. And, you know, if you look at E. Michael Jones, it's logos, the word reason, rationality versus irrationality. So, you know, there's a deeper understanding to this. But again, Brendan did say, keep the narrative simple, and here I am rambling on. But I do feel like that needs to be unpacked a little bit, because it's such a taboo subject. I mean, look at what we're talking about. I mean, you're talking about your friend Jonathan. You know, I'll let you talk about that in a second, but, you know, and we're talking about Brendan, who basically, you know, at a BDS, you know, pro-Palestine kind of rally sort of deal, and, about some, produce. There was Israeli, imported produce in Australia, and then there was two Jewish guys there, and Brendan had an altercation, which he filmed and he posted on YouTube. And, you know, there was no punches thrown or anything like that. He basically called him out and said they were racist and they were taking pictures of him. And that, you know, and Brendan could have taken the easy route, but he didn't. You know, he could have capitulated and gotten off light, but he stood up for what he believed and, you know, these hate speech laws. And they, you know, from there, they tried to make an example of him, and he served 3 years in prison, was beaten up, had his arm broken. Man, interesting stuff. I mean, you know, we can, I know you'll probably, you can post some links below this chat once we're done. You know, we can post to Brendan's channel for people to see his videos. They're well worth looking at, and some of the interviews y'all have done. But, yeah, I thoughts and prayers for the guy. I hope he gets out soon. And, you know, on these character flaw charts, whatever they're holding him for, because it is ridiculous. But, you know, love to hear you also talk, because we're going to get back to Brendan once we start talking about my articles and stuff. But I would love to hear about Jonathan a little bit.
Yeah, Jonathan, musician, hip-hop artist, a lot of what he talks about in his music and lyrics basically breaks down the geopolitic structure, the Judaic ideologies that dominate today, and basically calls him out for it. And in Canada, where he was living at with his fiance, his wife, I believe they might have gotten married, and so many different terminologies, how you would talk about it in Islamic law, but he released his music, and then B'nai B'rith of Canada came down hard on him, and we know a little bit about what Tony Hall has gone through from False Flag Weekly News with Kevin Barrett. So similar circumstances, but different, where Anthony Hall is actually from Canada, professor out in that area. And while Jonathan is an American and was suffering the heat from Canada's hate speech laws, so different in that aspect. And as an artist, you should be able to freely express yourself in your art to where they were inverting it to a direction where it was inciting violence.
Incitement. The language is key.
So they get, yeah, language is key. And they have no proof of intent from his music.
That's right, intent.
They have to prove intent. So as of right now, he's in America. He did escape. he did flee Canada. So he's not incarcerated or anything like that, with, like Brendan is. But there is potential charges pending right now, and but they do have to prove intent. Jonathan right now does believe, he does have good spirits in the sense of he believes that the worst case scenario is they're just going to prevent him from entering Canada. Hopefully that is the worst case scenario.
But the whole point of this is it's just sad to question history, you know, or to call out a certain group for wrongdoing that's a lot of it's provable.
Crimes against humanity.
And then, you know, these are basically, you know, thought crimes. Hate speech. It's ridiculous. And it's only a matter of time before they start doing it here. It kind of reminds me, like, after the Charlottesville shenanigans, you and Brendan, I don't have to go too much into it, but it's still, like, it's crazy. You read these mainstream articles about what happened in Charlottesville. What was that, a couple months ago? And, you know, they always talk about the person dying and that it's neo-Nazis and all that. Well, here in Memphis, you know, we had our mayor take part in an ADL initiative, a hate group, if we will, because that's what the ADL is. They fully support the racist apartheid state of Israel and, you know, run cover for it. There's this mayor's initiative to, you know, basically fight hate. And again, it's very vague and there's not really any meat to it or teeth to it right now, but it's almost like a setup for what could become hate speech laws. Correct. Like this conversation and what we're talking about, you know, could eventually equate to that down the road. So look, and neither one of us, we don't hate Jews. We don't, you know, it's ridiculous, but we're pointing out, you know, again, going back to Michael Hoffman and E. Michael Jones, you know, some of the work that they've done on pointing out, this Jewish fervor, like this revolutionary kind of, we can name some examples. What opened me up to this, Nick, and I've talked about it in my articles, I think every article at least cite about Israel's role in the 9/11 attacks.
Can you plug your websites, Joe, before
we go? Yeah, yeah. It's J. Davis Memphis. That's JDAVISMemphis.com. I actually, you know, started just doing some writing. I've only done 3 articles. I'm a novice. You know, I'm new to this. I didn't really start getting into any of this subject matter until about 2012. But globalvillagespace.com, it's a Pakistani, news outlet, alt media news outlet, English. But, you know, they have, you know, reach out and have a lot of guests, authors. And I think that came through Andrew Karibko. He's American or born here, but he moved to Moscow. A lot of his reading or writings, are Eastern leaning. Of course, he's in Moscow, but Andrew, I'll give him this, out of everybody, and I highly recommend people follow Andrew Karibko on Facebook. And it's just as far as geopolitics goes, you may not agree with everything the guy has to say, but he's worth following as far as wanting to know what's going on in the, you know, Russia, Israel, China, you know, One Belt, One Road. You know, the war in Syria. I mean, the guy covers so many different things but that's how it came about me writing these articles. Like Andrew and I had some correspondence just about Russia and Israel's, alliance. And he was starting to notice that, and he writes for Sputnik. He's paid by the Russian media outlet Sputnik, which is a sister, press outlet in Russia to Russia Today. And, but he also writes for a lot of different, alt media publications, Independent, the Duran, and even some Duganist, one of the Duganist sites. So I'll admit that openly, because, I think we would both agree to beware of Dugan. Basically Andrew and I had this kind of correspondence. I think Sarah Abed, who still is, I think a great source for certain information, but is very light on or just obfuscates the alliance between Israel and Russia, which is obvious. It's not hidden. And Andrew talks about it. He'll tag her in posts and me too about that. And, just trying to bring, and he's not trying to like troll her or anything like that. It's just like, hey, look, this is more proof of this. You know, I've been defriended by like Joaquin Flores, Syncretics, studies or whatever. And he had a Facebook group he kicked me out of because I wrote an article. It was the article you that I sent to you. He kicked me out. And I was like, he's like, to say that these are allies or something like that. I didn't even read this. And he's like, booted me. I'm like, what?
I've sent your article to a lot of pro-Syria activists out there. A lot of them are Syrian, and they will ignore the Russian-Israeli alliance. And I just kind of despise that.
Yeah, it makes you mad.
It's really frustrating.
Well, I mean, but here's the good thing. Andrew writes it. He wrote about it. He's like, I forgot how he put it, so I'm paraphrasing. He just said that, like, he'll admit when he's wrong. I've seen and he'll say, sometimes you're, predisposed or predisposition to a certain subject matter. Like you already kind of have your mind made up with certain situations without some objectivity. And then that, causes issues. And you see a lot of that with, Syria. So,
why has it got to be, if you're pro Syria, pro Assad, why do you have to ignore Russia's different intricacies of Gazprom, Rosneft, and all the other different aspects of Russia that are there are multinational corporations working directly with Western powers and Israel, even though Russia is supposedly in sanctions. They've been through all these different sanctions, but they're still exploring different areas of the world for oil and gas, and a lot of that is tied into the Western societies.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a hero complex. I think, you know, people want to, it's that good guy versus bad guy. They want a hero. I don't know how else to explain it.
I agree with that. And your friend Andrew, or your associate, by the name of Andrew, does seem like he's genuine when he does admit when he may be wrong or is wrong, and does go a different direction in the research. And that's the whole point of this, is to seek the truth, nothing but the truth. And the hero worship is a obstacle from actually seeking the 100% truth that's out there.
Yeah, and going back to what you were kind of talking about, like how this all came about for me, just kind of stepping out there. Like, I started a blog years ago, and you look at some of my earlier posts, and you know, there's a lot of ignorance, and even now, probably in certain areas, again, I'm new to this, well, somewhat since 2012, but you know, I'm constantly trying to learn and grow. And
10 years for me, man, really right about this time of waking up, and that was 2007 with, like, the Zeitgeist documentary and News Change, about a couple months of Alex Jones nonsense, and then I discovered Bill Cooper and realized that Alex Jones was obviously controlled opposition and a lot of that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, Sarah Opet had shared a video. I started, you know, doing commentary and posting my YouTube channel. I started posting them on Facebook. I noticed getting more views because, you know, anyway, she shared, it was just about Syria. And I think it was about when Trump bombed Syria.
The cruise missile situation?
The cruise missile thing. And, you know, I just made a video, but, you know, again, I didn't talk about Russia. I just said that this is ridiculous. And I was trying to be as rational. And like Brendan talks about, you got to, how to market this to normies, basically. Like, how do you, and it's very difficult. I mean, when you start, you know, anyway, I don't want to derail because I'll go on a tangent about that. But Sarah shared it. I think Andrew had seen that. We'd had some correspondence about Israel and Russia's relationship. Andrew had reached out to me. I did 3 different interviews with him. And he still may reach out to me every once in a while for just Sputnik. It's just a show called Trendstorm. He just tapes it. You know, we usually record in the morning. It's like usually a 6-minute to 13 minutes. Like, it'll be 13 minutes if his other guest cancels. And it's just me rambling like I am now. But, about different subjects, you know, like I can't remember, like it was the visit, like the Tillerson, visit, I think with Lavrov to Russia. Regards to Syria, and then the Trump kneeling thing, which I think Greg McCarron did a really good job with his podcast on kind of that thing. There was some, you know, I only had 6 minutes, but he had a whole hour show that goes into some really good subject matter on that. But again, you know, it's a lot of this divide and conquer crap. I think there was another one about the Muslim ban situation, which, you know, again, like with both of those subjects, it's, you just see a lot of, you know, create the dialectics or feed the different right and left dialectics. And
then, basically what Lark says is once you choose a side, you are participating in the dialectic.
And we all feed into that sometimes. Sometimes it's easy to do. I did that with the election with Trump. I didn't vote for Trump, but you started seeing the media come out and just attacking him so much. And then your friends on Facebook that are lefties that, you know, are just like, just going crazy. You just like, then you start to like, you libtards and, you know, it's easy to feed into it.
Joseph, I was on a dating website a couple years ago when Trump was first launching his campaign. And communicating with some of these women in Chicago, most of them are Democrats.
No way in Chicago.
Yeah, sure. And basically, I would troll some of these women that we were having dialogue, you know, potentially setting up a date, but at the same time, they're like, they want to get into politics because it's the election cycle. So even though I wasn't a Trump supporter, they would be like, oh, what do you think of Bernie Sanders? I'm like, I'm not so much into communism. What do you think about Trump? Just roll them with that, you know?
Yeah, but it'd be, the point is, it's easy to play into that, to the size of the divide and conquer sometimes. And
it's set up that way. That's the whole point of our society as far as what we're going through now. I mean, there's dialectics all over the place.
Yeah, and I mean, going back to what we're talking about, like, you know, I started from Andrew's work and seeing his stuff, and that's where Ali Saeed, one of the editors and the main editor of that site, Global Village Space, reached out to me. He's like, hey, would you like to write some stuff? And I think the first thing I wrote for him was so kind of, it was really short. It was just like, can America defeat the, what did I call it? I ended up posting it on a blog, but he was like, this is too short. This may be a little, like, he didn't say it was out there. Just like, can you kind of make this longer? But it was, can America defeat the free Masonic or the psychopathic free Masonic Zionist, like, plutocracy? Even though in my last article, I ended up calling it the cultic, Kabbalistic plutocracy.
Well, again, hey, Joseph, on your, on Global Village Space, when I, do a name search on you, you've got three posts. One was in July 11th, the monster and the U.S. Israeli Russia dirty game. All these are this year. And then August 7th, the one that you first tagged me in on Twitter was the Israel and the gimmickry of geopolitics. Mm-hmm. And then you wrote a recent one, is U.S. still the only superpower in the world?
Yep. Yeah, just those three. And, what is it? Ali Saeed, he basically comes up with the headlines, because I'm like, hey, man, I'll need, you know, if you come up with this. I'm new to it, too, so I don't really, you know, I'm like, here's what I'm written, you know, help me come up with something. So I'm not, you know, some of the headlines I may not even agree with so much, but, you know, it is all me with the content, that's for sure. I, you know, again, after hearing you and Brendan talk, and, you know, I came through hearing many of other Brendan's videos and about Tolpiot and, you know, Unit 8200 and beyond. And
I had to totally troll Brendan for probably almost 2 months about Unit 8200 because he wasn't ever bringing them up at all. I brought it up on the interview that him and I did. And then eventually people that are a few of them that are in our group chat were also trolling Brendan about Unit 8200. And then he starts talking about Unit 8200. And then him and I, once I was paying attention, even though I did an interview, we didn't really collaborate after that for a few months. And then at that point, I'm like, come on, Brendan, let's work together, man. There's so much that we have in common. We're on common ground with what's going on in our, and in a global world that we're living in today, that we should collaborate. So it worked out.
Yeah, and I mean, that's part two of that keep the narrative simple, right?
Yeah.
And you know, let's go back to part one. It's just this racist kind of ideology in this group that's kind of untouchable. You point out that they're racist. Brendan went to jail. Yeah. You know, it's in their, you know, this Talmudic, these holy books, this Kabbalistic kind of,
Zohar.
And again, but I want to say this too about that part one of the narrative is, okay, I was at a funeral and somebody quoted something from the Talmud and it was actually really pretty nice. I mean, but you have to understand, it's like, no, there's deeper meanings and understandings. And, you know, there's an article that Michael Hoffman wrote that I think everybody should read. It's like, America is under Talmudic law, not Sharia law. Right. Just Google that. America's under Talmudic law, not Sharia law. You know, it unpacks, it's going to explain it a lot better than I can. But, you know, but part two of this is Israel's domination of the high tech sector. And a lot of the work that Brennan's done on that, is unbelievable. That one post about Talpiot and, the Technion. Mm-hmm. Lord knows how many hits he's got on that. I mean, I posted that in my article.
Tens of thousands.
Yeah, and But it's unbelievable. We're talking about, like, you had that Snowden movie, and he has that in one of his videos about the kill switches. Mm-hmm. And that a lot of these companies and stuff have people from this Israeli Tolbiat program. And people that aren't familiar with Israel, everybody has to serve in the army, pretty much. And, you know,
it's kind of the old style of Greeks, where in order for your citizenship to, part of your citizenship is to serve in the military. So women, men, except for the Orthodox, hardcore sects that, dodge the military. Yes, it's part of your requirement for citizenship in Israel.
And so, I mean, that's important to understand that through that, they're able to dominate the tech sector. And I don't think people really understand, like, what that means geopolitically, you know, kill switches for infrastructure. That's, you know, and I would add to Brendan's, keep this narrative simple, even though, you know, we're kind of drawing it out and not keeping it as simple as maybe we should, but it's the central banking thing and usury.
Yeah.
That's a big lever of power right there, a money system that people don't understand. And there's a history behind that, that, you know, E. Michael Jones is showing in his book in very well sourced, you know, people don't, I remember being in high school. I went to a Christian high school, private, and we had Jewish, you know, classmates, and I have Jewish friends, by the way, and they don't even understand any of this stuff. It's kind of, it's funny. And, like, I just remember thinking back then, even talking with some of my Jewish guys, I'm like, why do people hate Jews? Like, what is the, I don't understand. Like, this doesn't make, but then you don't, because you're just told that, like, there's just this you know, they just hate them. Like, I don't know. Like, and then you start to realize once you start digging into history and looking at, you know, even revisionist history, you know, things like E. Michael Jones, Michael Hoffman, you know, you start to see this reoccurring theme of subversion and
inversion
within certain societies. And again, it goes back to what Michael Jones is pointing out. It goes back to Christ. And since then, it's been this, like, revolutionary spirit. They, taken over the banking sector of countries using usury. And then there's this, like, after, the economy, you have all these people suffering from under the weight of compound interest and debt. And then there's a backlash.
And then there's also a Polish proverb. I don't know if you ever heard of this one. The Jew strikes or cries in pain as he strikes you. There's this victim mentality that they've created, this aura of victimhood that gives this energy that says we're victims, so don't persecute us, while at the same time they're subverting, they're perverting, and they're inverting.
Yeah, and again, this is like the higher ranks, the top, the richer Jews. Like, I think that, you know, right now your everyday Jewish person that's just paying a mortgage trying to get by, they have no idea what all this is. And but
in America, maybe for the most part, but obviously if you're in Israel, you're in the heart of the supremacist mindset, where there's entitlement and pride, and then you get into the racial aspect of what is a Jew versus the ideological aspect of what a Jew is, whereas this mindset of being a racial identity and a religious concept of what a Jew is.
Whatever suits the need these days. Like, whatever, you know, the argument is, it's like one or the other, but really in reality, it's the theological, you know, it's religious, really. It's not ethnic. And I think that E. Michael Jones has done a really good job of pointing that out, that it was ethnic before Christ. And then afterwards, it is religious, and it's a rejection of Christ. And again, it goes back to how do you interpret Christ? Like, you know, like Jan and Clint are talking about, which I'm very open to, and it makes a lot more sense to me, is Christ in the New Testament is natural law. And it's this rejection of that. And then you can kind of see, like, examples of that. Like, look at 9/11. Like, if you really research that and look into it, like, I'm from Memphis. And, you know, I can point that out to Memphians. It's like, hey, there was a group of Middle Easterners, and one guy was, I think, from Libya, that were arrested right after 9/11, 2001. Like, I think it was a day or two afterwards. It was within a week. And it was, like, 8 or 9 guys. And they were trying to, or had bought real IDs, but with the names changed and all that on the IDs for like $1,000 a piece from a state worker, a Tennessee state worker named that I guess worked from the DMV, Catherine Smith. And so the day before she was supposed to go testify or something like that, she was burned alive. And again, it wasn't these guys, they were in jail. But very interesting, and they come to find out, and this was reported by local news outlets, like a lot of them reported the fact, and the commercial appeals, like our kind of main paper here, that one of the guys had a pass the World Trade Center building and said he was working on the sprinkler systems, and they worked for Denko Mechanical was the name of the company, and the owner was Sergey Denko, who was a Israeli Jewish migrant that migrated here in 1989. So they were working for an Israeli Jew, and, you know, were buying fake IDs. It's like, well, what were they doing? And it all goes back to, well, you know, how did those buildings fall down like that, especially World Trade Center 7. So, I mean, again, I don't want to get on all that, but there's just one, like, kind of aspect of this. We can point at a bunch of others, you know, going back to, you know, how our money system works now. Even I think E. Michael, I was listening to a talk the other day, and I'll get to it in his book. I haven't finished it. It's a really long book, but talking about, like, what was it, the 13th century in England when they kicked the Jews out, usury, you know, and driving the commune to the dirt. And then, you know, the people rise up and, you know, go and burn their books, like the bookkeeping, to erase the debt and kick them out. And again, this is not it happens throughout history. You know, you could go into you probably know more about the Bolshevik thing than I do. I mean, I'm skipping ahead to like the 1917 Bolshevik Revolution, that even Putin said, you know, the Bolsheviks, the leadership was made up of what, 80 to 85% were Jewish. You know, Trotsky, who was supported by what, Jacob Schiff, out of, you know, Jew out of New York. But again, like, there's just a lot of proof of this, and I don't want, because, like, you know, God, you know, if one of my Jewish friends saw this, they'd be like, what are you doing? It's like, well, no, this is, why do you think there's such a backlash? You know, like, this is a warning. Brendan said it best. Like, somebody had, I think a fan or follower had done like an 11-minute or 10-minute version of some of y'all's interviews.
Yeah.
Best part. I remember Brendan saying this, and I've said it before too. It's like, hey, this is happening again. There's going to be another backlash. It's so obvious right now with 9/11. Even Alan Sobrowski, you know, of the, I forgot, you know, pretty high-ranking military guy and Jewish, yep, you know, said that, hey, if this gets out, you know, Israel will be demolished. He's like, and I don't even think it's that. I mean, if you talk, you know, you start going and people start understanding, you know, cultural subversion. God, what was in the 60s, the cultural degradation that happened with the, you know, the drugs, sex and rock and roll, the Grateful Dead, all, you know, that was supported by a lot of handling.
We're in a lot of anniversaries this year, actually.
Oh, yeah.
We have the Bolshevik Revolution. We have the Balfour Declaration, 100 years. We have 70 years of when the security state was formed here in America. 1947 was when all the different alphabet gangs were formed, NSA, CIA, FBI, all of that. We also had the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls 70 years ago. We had what you were talking about too with the flower power and all that, the 60s revolution and MK Ultra, with which Gnostic Media discusses quite a bit. So a lot of anniversaries this year.
Yeah, I mean it's overwhelming. Like it's a common theme, and again, it's not all Jews. That, you know, you got your what do you call it, the Shabbos, you know, like helping along. And let's take a prime. You know, there's Freemasonry that plays a big role in this. And this, that's why I called it the occultic Kabbalistic cabal or plutocracy, because you have a lot of these people that aren't necessarily Jewish, but are helping with this system that we're in right now, this debt slavery, these perpetual wars.
Evangelical Christians, the Christian Zionists.
Yeah, through the Scofield Bible, yep. Which a lot of evangelicals don't even realize that was translated in the early 1900s to be more pro-Israel, to set that state up and have Christians support it.
It was prior to the 1900s, because even William E. Blackstone in Chicago started forming a lot of these different conferences and congregations. Protestant, I don't really trust the fact that with a last name Blackstone that you're genuinely Anglo-Saxon, but, you know, still a Protestant in Chicago who first was the purveyor of the idea of creating a state for the Jews in Palestine prior to the Balfour Declaration and prior to Herzl. So a lot of the movement of Christian Zionism helped perpetuate the creation of Israel prior to Herzl and the Jewish Zionists.
I mean, I remember seeing a headline recently, and again, the article may have been a little older, but it was like, is Herzl anti-Semitic or something like that? And because he even stated that they would use anti-Semites to further their cause.
Sure.
They need, you know, and again, we're not, like, we're just having an open conversation, asking people to look a little deeper and prove us wrong, man. You know, hey, you know, if this isn't, you know, this doesn't have any basis in reality, then hey, I'll eat crow. But I mean, the more you look at this, it's hard to deny it. And we're not goose-stepping around, you know, Hitler fan nuts. Like, no, that's not what this is about. Although there is something to even revisionist history with World War II that people don't understand. Right. I mean, I will talk to folks, Nick, and you know, that are more centrist, I guess, politically. And, you know, I've noticed two different people say this, like, man, ooh, nationalism is on the rise, man. It's this huge problem. And I'm like, you know, and again, it's because of, I think that this misunderstanding, and again, I'm not like a hardcore nationalist,
right?
But I don't hate America and like gonna go just, you know, I understand who's running it a lot more than most.
Wouldn't you say that nationalism is more of a natural state of mind rather than being anti-nationalist?
Well, do you want to go against your own interest?
Right.
I mean, do you want, like, you know, do you want to see us destroyed? Like, like, you want to see us collapse? And you
so
know,
why go to one extreme of having complete open borders, let everybody in, not even vet them, not even know who they are, and create this rainbow nation? So is that a good thing for the people who founded the country, or should there be some sort of protections? Should there be a protectionism kind of mindset where you protect the people that are here now?
Well, how did that work out for the Indians?
Yeah.
The Native Americans, how did that work out with, you know, the open borders and all our ancestors flowing in here? Not too well.
Well, there's a good satire that is called
Dante posted it.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. From Horace the Avenger, White Rabbit Radio,
yeah,
who created the satire called How White.
It's pretty good, man.
There's another good one that he put out was Anti-Racist Hitler that everyone should check out.
Yeah, and again, but what I'm getting is these two people, I think it's because of the misunderstanding of World War II and who was really behind that.
Sure.
And, you know, if the more you know about that, and it goes back to like, well, what was the beef with the Jews back then? Like, you know, and it goes back to not understanding the Bolshevik Revolution.
Right.
And history.
And in a current situation, you can look at what happened to Libya being sort of similar to what happened to Germany in World War II. A lot of similarities.
Yeah.
Both of them had a similar type of political economic structure too. National socialism in Germany was quite similar to Libya with Gaddafi at its as Libya's leader.
Yeah, that's labor development economic or labor versus usury sort of deal.
Gaddafi was anti-usury. I mean, he was definitely as close to the Quran as one could be.
Yeah, and Russia didn't do much for him, did they?
No.
But they're, how are they doing? What are they? Didn't you point out, or somebody, all the contracts that they have now in Libya?
Yeah, Rosneft is getting Libyan oil, and so they're reaping the benefits of the demise of Libya.
And a lot of people, they don't even know what to say to that. Like, it was like, wasn't it Menendez, whatever the hell the other guy was, that's still, you know, in political office in Russia. I think he was the main guy at the time. It basically, all Russia said was like, oh, this is ridiculous, but they didn't really do much to stop it or condemn it. And then, you know, with Syria, we see, and this is something we need to point out, like, I had sent an article to Brendan, and I just thought he knew, and you too. And he ended up doing a video, and I was like, "Holy crap!" Brendan like is posting one of my tweets and about this article from the week in 2015, and it was in the article that
that article was spot on as far as what I can tell.
It's a mainstream. It's a 2015 article by the week, and it basically postulates Russia taking over Israel's defense from the U.S. And then what
so instead of America being the lapdog for Israel and being the defense arm for Israel, it's going to shift over to Russia. And that's
what's happening.
Sense. Yeah.
And it's what's happening. That's what I'm talking about in these articles. I'm like, well, you know, and the one I sent y'all, you know, posted just the link to this, I'm just basically explaining or trying to show that, like, okay, you know, looking at it from the outside, like, you know, people like Sarah Abed and others, like, okay, yes, Russia did come in and save Assad. Like, that can't be disputed. You know, it was Russia, Iran, Hezbollah, and the Syrian Arab Army versus basically a bunch of Wahhabi cult nutters, like in these different brigades, whether it be ISIS and Al-Qaeda and the Har al-Sham and the Zinki, whatever, a bunch, you know, basically, you know, complete Sunni Wahhabi nutters. And so when Russia got involved, they basically, you know, and they're still cleaning up Syria. But you also see them with these de-escalation zones, you know, that were called safe zones that the U.S. was actually for. Yep. And if you look at the map of where those, I think it's four of them, from the Astana agreement. I think that's Turkey, Russia, and Iran. I can't remember if it's Turkey, Russia, and Iran. But Syria approved it. But basically, if you look at the sliver, it's the Alawite section on the coast. Hmm. And if you look at the New York Times map of where they were talking about breaking up Syria, it aligns nicely with that map. You know, you have the Alawite section, and then you have the Sunni section, you have the Kurds up north. I think there was like a little bit for the Druze, which I'm not as familiar with, but it's interesting. It's like, you know, here it is, Russia's gonna, and then Russia's talking about, you know, even helping rewrite the constitution, but they're gonna keep Assad in power. But basically what I was saying is that Assad doesn't have a lot of room, you know, leverage.
Not much influence is what can actually happen in his own country.
He's only breathing because of them. But
and then you also see the Russia's Rosneft also striking deals with the Kurds in Iraq.
Yeah, and that's, you know, Andrew's been very open and posting a lot about that, and, you know, tagging folks like Sarah in it and like just making it clear, like, hey, you know, this is happening. And, you know, and he had a really good article called the, and it was in the Global Village space, called the Kurdish Kaleidoscope. Really long, but if you go just Google Andrew Kuripko Kurdish Kaleidoscope and go to the last like two sections of it, it talks about, you know, kind of this Russian support of the Greater Kurdistan project, but it's like very nuanced. It's almost like Talmudic where they kind of support it, but kind of don't. Just depends on the situation. You see that with Dugin too.
Oh, yeah.
Everything's situational. And you know, it's a deception, but, or, you know, geopolitics, seeing which way the wind's blowing.
Here in America, we've got the issue of Russian involvement in American politics, and you've got the uranium deal that took place prior to Trump taking office and things of that nature. What do you think of the aspect of the, subversion happening here in America in our political system, where there's obvious Russian involvement in America, but how they spin the story, it gets everybody choosing sides in the dialectic. I mean, that's what I'm seeing. And there's obvious Russian involvement with they're not really Russians, though, of course. They're oligarchs, they're Jewish. Who are, a lot of them are connected to Chabad Lubavitch.
Chabad Lubavitch, yeah. That's what I'm going to say. It's like there was only one article that actually in mainstream that talked about that.
And that was Politico.
That Brendan posted, yeah. Yeah, I mean, exactly. They'll talk about it. They won't bring up Israel. And then when they do, they kind of obfuscate or just, you know, push it aside. But yeah, I mean, you know, I love when Brendan was talking about Anatoly Golitsyn's new laws for old and, you know, that sort of thing, that really, communism didn't die, or the Soviet Union really never fell, that there's still remnants of it. And you can see it too. And there's a lot of rumors about Putin's mother being Jewish, which, you know, I think it's got some, meat to it. Yes, some validity to it. I even, you know, was kind of had a conversation. Well, I don't want to mention who it was, but somebody that, you know, in the alt media community, I guess, it was talking about Maduro and some of these Latin American
leaders. Also, with Jonathan Azizaya, we talked about the Muranos and how pretty much Latin America, any person in leadership for the most part, or anybody who has wealth, could potentially be Jewish, but at the same time, this conquistador, this invasion of Latin America happened so many centuries ago that even Maduro was calling out Jewish ideologies, and even Chavez prior to him talking about the Pharisees and how they're pretty much in the banking cartels and pull America's strings and all that kind of stuff. So basically, in a nutshell, yeah, what it boils down to is your intent, your motivation. What you intend to do as a leader, even if you might be some sort of Sephardi from hundreds of years ago, does Maduro have the intent to cause demise on his people in Venezuela? And I see the opposite happening in Venezuela. I'm not completely a fan of their form of government, but it works for their people. And that's been working for Venezuela. If they didn't have the neoliberal interventions that have been taking place for about a century, they wouldn't have the issues that they have today. They wouldn't have manipulation of their currency. They wouldn't have this food crisis that they're dealing with because they have oligarchs in Venezuela that control the food. So it's an issue that Venezuela is going through was similar to what the Soviet Union was going through. Their people were not, maybe if they were Jewish, they weren't, they were still being persecuted. So I don't know. So it's a very similar situation. Joseph, we have about 5 minutes, man. So let's go into whatever direction you want to go to for the next 5 minutes.
Well, I mean, just it kind of dovetails because we're talking about Venezuela. Like in my most recent Global Village Space article, like I just mentioned how a lot of countries are just pivoting away from the U.S. this kind of orchestrated shift from the unipolar U.S. dominated world order to the multipolar world order. But at the end of the day, at the very top, it's orchestrated by this, you know, what I said was a cultic, Kabbalistic plutocracy. What I mean by that is kind of like, you know, you have this cultic element, this Jewish element, as far as organized Jewry goes, and you know, through these levers like the money system, you know, Bank for International Settlements, all these countries' banks route up. And that's, you know, another one that people don't understand. And, you know,
the Swiss system, too, is how transactions happen globally. So if you're part of the Swiss system, you're part of the Bank of International Settlements, and you're part of the international banking cartel. Pretty simple.
Yes, it's usury, though. At the end of the day, it's massive, massive centralized. It's a cartel. It's usury. And if there's a way to break that, too, if people understood money a little better. I even tried to give a talk, or I did give a talk at this more conservative-leaning group, Take Back Tennessee, about a public banking initiative for Tennessee based on the Bank of North Dakota, which is the only publicly owned state bank. I think that, you know, so I think there's two, like, you know, we're at the end here. It's like, I want to talk a little bit about solutions because, you know, you start looking at this stuff and seeing how controlled things are. Things look bleak. But I do think that there's, you know, ways to fight it, or at least try. And one of that is just awareness. And then, you know, like Brendan's doing, I mean, I think you do have to try whatever you can do within the political structure. I don't have a lot of hope or faith in that, but I think that you have to at least try because that still plays into the awareness part of it. But, there's also the other side of it. It's kind of like, and I heard Clinton Yon talking about this in the last talk. It's like, you know, or how do we get just start anew and start our own system? And I know, you know, that the tyrants will try to, you know, take over, but I'm going to leave it with some quotes here that ties some things in. And one of them was one that Clint made in the talk. He said it was a quote from William Penn, but it was something along the lines of, you know, the further away a country gets from God, the more it will be ruled by tyrants. And again, when I say God, in what they were meaning is not this organized, you know, dogmatic religion. It's just understanding God as nature. And we've gotten so far away from that, you know, and we are ruled by tyrants. I think most even normies kind of realize that to a certain extent. And then there was also the Pope, I can't remember the Pope that said this quote, but it was one from E. Michael Jones, always quotes. He says that, a country that is, you know, gets away from Christ will be ruled by the Jews. It's something along, I'm paraphrasing, but something along those lines. And again, it's understanding Christ and what he means, you know, which could be interpreted as natural law and nature. You know, those that get away from that and the natural law and what is rational and reasonable, will be ruled by what is the antithesis of that, which is irrational, unreasonable, like these perpetual wars. Look at the wealth divide through usury. You know, people think that this is like this capitalism. It's state-sponsored usury. It doesn't benefit us. We're slaves to this. And there's ways to get out of that, and that's, I think, getting back to Christ and God in a certain sense, an understanding of that, not the Bible thumping, you know, interpretation of organized religion. Because, I mean, look at a lot of these evangelical Christians through the Scofield Bible are supportive of Israel, which is, you know, they spit on Christians. Like, you know, like look up Haaretz spit on Christians. I mean, you'll find like they're very, it goes what E. Michael Jones is talking about. He's like, this is a rejection of Christ and Logos. Like there is an order to the universe. There is a God. I think that, you know, atheism is totally irrational when you really think about it. It's like, you know, there has, you know, this just didn't come about on accident.
Right. You know, it's something out of nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Creation doesn't come from nothing.
Exactly.
It's something to create.
Yeah, and so there is a certain truth in getting back to Christ and God. A very good conversation that that E. Michael Jones was making with Kevin Barrett. I don't know if you heard it. You can find it on Jones' YouTube channel, but they're just talking about this. And, you know, Barrett's a Muslim. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was and Jones was very kind of open to how he wanted to present these. Like, look, we just there has to be this massive conversion back to God and Logos. And he just kind of kept it open. It wasn't like you have to be a Catholic Christian.
Sure.
It's just understanding, rationality. Like we're this is so irrational what's going on in the system. And again, pointing out all the, you know, the Jews and the power structure doesn't mean we hate these people. Right? We want a Holocaust, man, and we're goose stepping around. No, that's idiotic. No, what we want is some rationality and conversion in the sense of converting over to Christ in the sense of reason, rationality, getting back to natural law, what, you know, is innate, what we know is right, you know, yeah, I mean, is, you know, good versus evil. Like,
I mean, having a society that's upside down, we'd like to reverse that back to its natural order.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and again, like, you know, you have all these dialectics that are easy to fall, like we talked about earlier, you just kind of can fall into this us versus them. And
they're all control mechanisms.
Yeah, Greg McCarron does a great job, I think, in his podcast, The Antidote, of kind of talking about that. I haven't listened to his latest one.
You know, one just came out a few hours ago. It's on YouTube.
Yeah, no, I was starting to listen to it earlier, but I was like, no, I need to, you know, I'll take some time later on. I'm definitely going to listen to it.
It was just on Tim Kelly's show.
And yeah,
I want to commend him for plugging me several times on that podcast. I hope that does help. He totally mentioned my name several different times throughout the podcast, and I do appreciate that greatly.
No, I did. I heard him give you the shout out, so that's awesome, man. I wanted to give him some too because I'm new to kind of Greg's work with it. I forgot the guy he does his podcast with, but
Jeremy. Really good.
Yeah, really good information. That's Antidote, A-N-T-E-Dote, like Annie Up. Recommend people checking that out. And
how do people find you again?
Yeah, jdavismemphis.com is my website. My Twitter handle is also jdavismemphis too. And I think that's the same as YouTube as well. But yeah, Nick, I really appreciate you having me on, man. I'd like to do this again. We're kind of all over the place, but you know, this is still new to me.
To you, small talk, but important talk, not small talk, but it is a way of introducing our audience to you, and we're able to have this camaraderie and discussion to where you and I can develop future talks and get more into the nitty-gritty, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, because the next thing I want to that I want to write about is Melissa and
Aaron Dykes,
the fourth industrial revolution. Cause I think that it picks up where, the Jewish revolutionary spirit left off. Cause basically E. Michael Jones covers from Christ all the way, you know, the Jewish revolutionary spirit from the rejection of Christ all the way up into
Vatican II pretty much.
No, neoconservatism and the Iraq war. I mean, in 9/11, which we know it was Israeli involvement in, if not, they were the main player. But then picking up from that to where we're headed now with this fourth industrial revolution and what you guys are talking about, you and Brendan had been talking about with the Technion, this,
Software,
you know,
program and Unity, and their domination of the tech sector.
But I mean, they're sucking up all this data, and then now they're talking about a global brain. Mm-hmm. And so, where are we going? That even there's a Jewish ex Google worker talking about an AI god. I have it pulled up. Here's a top, you know, former Google engineer is developing an AI god. Way of the Future, a religious group founded by Anthony Lewandowski, wants to create a deity based on artificial intelligence for the betterment of society. This is from The Guardian, a mainstream outlet. And, you know, and then you're talking about this global brain. And then we, you know, you have stuff and elements of revelations and, you know, where will that global brain live?
Well, even Peter Thiel has been discussing neuron lace, you know, the neurons that are in a brain, the lacing, the information flow, the bandwidth in order to create this global brain. So there's a lot of collaborators that we have to focus in on.
Yeah, and the digital tattoos and, like, you know, this 5G and that sort of thing that gets, it's really, it seems kooky and, oh, it's so conspiratorial, but it's like, no, there are so many mainstream outlets talking about this. It's just not front page news or on the Today Show. But I mean, you start looking into this and it's concerning, and it goes, Clint Richardson and both Brendan O'Connell pointed this out, that, you know, if you're looking at the Bible and Revelations and the Antichrist, like anti-logos, anti-rationality, and it would be a supercomputer, a global brain, basically, yep. That was what we're talking about in Scripture as the Antichrist, possibly. I mean, I'm just speculating, and again, I'm not a devout, you know, like going to church every Sunday, but starting to get a better understanding of the New Testament, or just very interested in it from Clinton and their discussions, and even some of the things that Brendan's pointed out. Cause you could, even in his videos, you can see him kind of battling spiritually with a direction to go. It's very interesting to see that. And it's in, but at the same time, it is inspiring, because I think all of us are trying to, like, we know things are really messed up. Something's wrong. You know, this is
more important that we have, is because we can sort things out. People who are viewing and listening can participate, and they can also contribute. And we can have, I don't like to say a collective. I really don't like that word.
Commie!
In a way, I mean, that's what we're trying to do, is have a common mindset in order to reestablish a natural order.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, some sort of rational order, because this is totally irrational. I mean, this is, and then you're cheering for Russia and China, you know, like, it's crazy. It's like, well, who built up China? Like, and then you see with Mao, and you see some Jewish hands in that.
Oh, yeah.
There was the Financial Times or some mainstream outlet talking about, you know, this Jewish revolutionary guy that would, you know, help with Mao and that sort of thing.
Right? Not even, right?
Yeah, I mean, at least when I saw the post, it was in our, you know, kind of old think tank. Somebody passed, like, holy crap. But I mean, I heard Brendan talk about it, you know, and then there it is, like in a mainstream publication talking about, as if it was some good thing, like, you know.
Oh, yeah. And then even towards the end, Brendan had to start self-censoring himself, because he realizes the relationship that Malaysia has with China. And he was living in Malaysia, and he was starting to, he was telling me he's got to start censoring himself because of that connection of the One Belt, One Road connection with Malaysia and China. So,
and Israel is heavily involved in this. God, and there's so much I wanted to get to in this talk. Like, I have like a thing of notes. I know. Like, I even, like, the Saudi Arabia, the Nome, the NAOM city that they're building. Yeah.
It's, and like, Russia and Israel are going to be some of the heavier investors into this mega city in Saudi Arabia.
And it's within the greater Israel, like, lines, too, which is exactly. Really the whole world. But, but, I mean, you know, it is. It's, like, right there below Israel, and they're talking about this high-tech city. It's like the Jetson city. Like, it's crazy. And then
they've already got a pyramid in Dubai where 1 million people can live in there, and it's green, self-sustaining and all that kind of stuff. So that's what our future megacities are going to start looking like.
And then we're going to have, like, what they're testing in China, the citizen points. They're talking about you basically China's modern, you know, testing this citizenry point structure and all this, like, you know,
how good of a citizen are you? And there's going to be like 0 to 100 ranking system that is going to be embedded. Or they even had like it's like a video game where what your point value was above their heads as
gamification. Yay for us. And I mean, again, but I think the universal basic income is going to come into that, eventually when the economy, you know, like all the jobs are kind of
automation,
automated and AI. And so oh, well, you know, we're just going to do the right thing and give y'all a universal basic income based on your citizen score, and you've got your little like tattoo chip.
Or just whatever. Be pets, right?
Yeah.
There's a good old flick that maybe on your free time you'll check out. It's a cartoon. It's originally a French cartoon. I think I brought it up on a show where maybe you've heard it, called Fantastic Planet. And they're called drogs. These, I think of it, if an analogy would be the futuristic concept of Jerusalem and Jews ruling over the Goyim. And then you had the people, and they were just pets or pestilence, almost the same word in a way, right? Where if they were overpopulating, they would throw out these toxic, like rat pellets into their little villages. And
well, people may think that what you just said is crazy, like, oh my god, he just hates you. And it's like, no, actually, you can go and look up video. There was a viral one that where a guy was literally, you know, older guy and Jewish guy in Israel, literally talking about just that like the goyim, they will serve us. I mean, I shared that, and I had one of my Jewish friends like lash out at me. If it was a Muslim saying this sort of stuff, would you care? Or a Christian? No. It's because it's, you know, it's like this, I don't, insulated.
Taboo.
Yeah, and it's like, this is crazy. No, this is out in the open if you just know where to look. And hell, follow the Jewish publications. Follow the Jewish Daily Forward.
Yeah.
Follow Haaretz. Even the Jerusalem Times and the Times of Israel. Because, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, even with the digital currency stuff and the SDR, there was a Jerusalem Post article that Brendan shared. I shared it in my last article on Global Village Space, talking about, you know, we'll, you know, there may be, you know, an economic collapse. And, you know, I know, you know, Israel's kind of, you know, alive with China and Russia too. And there may be this, you know, some sort of economic collapse, but, you know, that'll be great because we can wipe the slate clean and introduce, you know, like a digital
reset currency.
Yeah, and introduce a digital currency like Bitcoin, even though I don't think that Bitcoin
will be the one.
Will be that. Yeah, well, I mean, it's more of a commodity the way it's that it works. But, you know.
There's an article out there called The Jewish Whiz Kid Behind Bitcoin, and that's tied to Unit 8200. So.
That's a lie, Nick.
It's out there. It's going to find it.
No. But yeah, so I know you've got to get to bed, or at least I do, because I've got to get up early. But because I could keep rambling on and on. But yeah, that's good. That's what I want to do for the next article, though, is kind of talk more of the technocracy thing. And I think there's some taboo about that, but I want to cite some really good mainstream sources. A lot of what Melissa Melton and Andrew Dykes were talking about their last or video. In this global brain, and you know, it's going to be speculative because some of my articles are, but some of that is actually come true. Like the article I wrote about Syria and the Golan border, I said that there may be a base put there by Russia to kind of protect. Is, you know, they're going to say that it's to protect Assad in the alt media, but it's really to protect Israel. Well, they haven't built a base there just yet, but you see them. They're even meeting, you know, here I think within a week or currently. To push Iran and what Brendan calls putting them back in their box. And I was writing about that too. And I'm like, that's what's going to happen. They're going to push Syria and Hezbollah's influence in Syria back as much as possible. And they're already talking about, you know, that kind of line, and how far back that they'll allow, Iran and Hezbollah to operate there. And you're going to see that, you know, more and more, and then the saber rattling too. But I hopefully it won't lead to any kind of bloodshed. Because I think Russia, you know, Israel's ally, is going to be very key in making that happen.
Yeah.
And I hope I'm right about that in a certain sense that, yeah, I don't want to see more people getting killed.
Right.
So.
All right, man. Well, Joe, thank you very much for joining me tonight. We'll be in touch very soon, and hopefully we'll get together again like this and discuss further topics.
All right. Thanks so much, Nick. I really appreciate you reaching out to me and doing this, man.
Thanks. Thank you very much, too. We'll talk soon, man. Have a good night.
You too.
Thank you.